From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, in for Peter Biello, and this is the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup on The Exchange. A big announcement yesterday regarding vaccines from New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu. Anyone aged 16 and older can receive the coronavirus vaccine in New Hampshire, even if they're not state residents. Today in the Roundup, we'll talk about that. But before we do, State House politics with Senate President Chuck Morse. And after that, a conversation with the head of a brand new state office aimed at promoting the great outdoors. Exchange listeners, we welcome your questions as always. But just for today, we're unable to take your calls. So send your thoughts and comments by email to exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. You can use Facebook or Twitter, too, if you'd like. Well, let's begin the roundup this week with New Hampshire State Senate President Chuck Morse. He's a Republican from Salem. Now, next week, we'll talk to the Senate's Democratic leader, Donna Soucy. Senator Morse, welcome back. Great to have you.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we're a little bit more than halfway through this year's session, Senator Morse. So just remind us, please, what your priorities were at the beginning of the year, and how's it going?
I think it's going well. Our priorities changed a little bit because of COVID. It was much more about operational parts of the Senate, but we seem to have survived that. And I think you'll see the Senate start to go back into session at the State House. But at the beginning of the year, we made it very clear that our priority was going to be the budget and, you know, making sure we put the tax reductions back into the budget. And Governor Sununu did that, and the House seems to have followed that, and the Senate will take that up shortly.
Well, and I definitely want to ask you about this, the state budget, because obviously that's your biggest priority in a budget year. But I am interested in what you just said, Senator Morse. The Senate might be back in session at the State House. So have you guys been mostly meeting remotely?
Oh, we've been meeting all remote. Committees have been meeting remote, and the sessions have been remote. They've worked well up till now. I think yesterday was like we're getting fatigue with doing the sessions remote. On the 22nd, we're going to do one more remote session, which most of our bills that'll be on the floor that day, I would think, would be on consent calendar. So that one should be, you know, normal. And then on the 29th, we're going to go back into session at the State House.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Well, and let's talk about the state budget. The House passed a $13.6 billion state budget proposal over to you guys on Wednesday. Governor Sununu said that this budget has, quote, gone off the rails because he said it's not fiscally balanced, packed with non-budgetary items. Do you agree, Senator Morse? Is the House budget off the rails?
I've been in the State House long enough to know that when the Senate gets a budget, we go through it with a fine-tooth comb, and we'll do that for the next 5 weeks. And I'm certain when we develop a product coming out of the Senate will be proud of it, and we'll go to committee of conference and defend it. There'll be issues in that budget coming over that will be challenges, but there'll also be things that the Senate comes up with that'll be challenges. So I think we work through these things. We're pretty good at it, and I'm looking forward to it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, you've been around the block with this thing more than once, for sure. Well, what are your goals for this budget, Senator Morse?
Yeah, I said that, you know, putting the tax decreases in place, I think that's important. You know, Representative Hinch had written legislation that I picked up after his passing, and just restoring what we had done. I mean, we had made a promise to businesses because we wanted to start to attract businesses to New Hampshire and keep businesses in New Hampshire on the business profits tax and the business enterprise tax. We set goals and they seem to be working. I mean, New Hampshire's taking in more revenue and we seem to be attracting businesses to New Hampshire. So I think that's a priority in this budget. And obviously the House set many of the same priorities, including interest and dividends, which I've been talking about a lot for the last 2 years. I think we have to worry about making sure we keep seniors in New Hampshire and don't have them move to Florida or something to avoid paying interest and dividends tax. So I think the phase out over 5 years is a smart move for New Hampshire.
That's actually a pretty big move. That tax has been in place as long as I can remember anyway. The interest and dividends tax, often called New Hampshire's income tax on senior citizens.
Good reason to get rid of it.
Will that create a budget hole, Senator Morse? I mean, how much revenue does this bring in?
Now, you know, listen, the House built a budget at 13.6. I mean, bigger than the governor's last budget. I certainly, you know, have been one that I go back even further than that, because the last budget that I worked on, we were at 11.8. And I thought when we built this last budget, we had room to trim. And I think when the Senate goes in, we certainly will look to going back 4 years and move forward with numbers that will work for the state of New Hampshire. So I don't see that we're not meeting the needs of the people. I mean, we've always been very good about that. I mean, the Senate's done a lot of work on mental health, the disabled community, you know, bipartisan work. So I think we've met those needs, and I think there's enough revenue there to take care of it.
I have a couple more questions about the budget for you, Senator Morse, please. Here's an email from Mary who says, our public schools, especially those in property-poor districts, are chronically underfunded. Yet, Mary says, the Senate just voted to restore only half of the $90 million decline in state funding that districts are facing next year. Meanwhile, Mary says, the Senate passed a voucher bill that would send tens of millions of state dollars to students who are currently enrolled in private schools and paying tuition without help from the state. Mary asks, if the state doesn't have enough money to maintain its already low level of funding for public schools, where the vast majority of New Hampshire students go, then how does it have money to fund vouchers? There's a lot to unpack from your email, Mary. Thank you. First of all, Senator Morse, she says the Senate just restored half of the $90 million decline in state funding for public schools. What's your response or your take on that?
Well, I think this is, you know, it's a complicated subject, but the reality is the Senate, right off the bat, made two decisions. One, we knew there was a flaw in the funding formula for kindergarten. We passed that immediately. The second thing we did, Aaron Hennessy passed a bill that let the school systems go back to 2019 and use those numbers to produce what they should be getting from the state in funding. That was $46 million, and that's why she's saying half. In the budget that they built 2 years ago, they had another amount of money that they sent out that they said was one-time money. So we need to remember that. But having said all of that, I firmly believe we don't want to go back to talking about donor towns in the state of New Hampshire. And there's certainly $1.2 billion worth of reasons, and that'll drive us to an income tax. So I don't even want to head there, but I have had calls from senators. Matter of fact, Senator Sherman called me on the way home last night, and he said, because he would have had donor towns in his district, and he said, if I can help at all, he says, please call me. And I said, Senator, I said, understand one thing. The formula that was put in place by Senator Rausch and Senator Stiles made sure that every child in New Hampshire was treated financially the same. Beyond that, we had this problem where we had to make sure that the communities that, you know, were having difficulty functioning, like Manchester or Derry, we held them harmless. I think that's where the Senate needs to look at how do we develop future education money. And I certainly believe that's what we're going to do. And I said to Senator Sherman, I said, Senator, we need fresh eyes on this. We don't need to put in a plan that creates division in the state of New Hampshire that, you know, makes donor towns, it won't work. And it'll require money in the future by doing that. And it'll certainly lead to an income tax, and I'm not going.
Well, and the whole education funding system, my goodness, it's a huge topic that we need to explore more fully in a full show than what I have time for with you today, Senator Morse. So I'll set that aside for now. But to Mary's other point, she's talking about a Senate bill that you sponsored, actually, relative to education freedom accounts, which would provide public funds to pay for the basic education costs of children of middle and lower income families to attend private schools. And this gets into the ongoing issue, the longstanding issue, as you know, Senator Morse, of whether public funds should go to private schools. Can you make the case for why you think this is the way to go?
Well, I honestly believe in school choice. I think COVID's proven that parents want that. But, you know, to basically say we're taking money away from school systems is wrong. I mean, and in order to help with that debate, the Senate put in place in that bill that in the first year, the school system would get 100% of the money, even though the child moved out of the school system. The second year, they'd get 50%, and the third year, they'd get 25%. But the Josiah Bartlett Center did a study, and school systems will start saving within the first 2 years. I think their study showed $10 million. I think the study coming out of the department showed after 5 years that it would be $50 million in savings. I do realize that if you take one child out, you're not going to be able to reconstruct the, you know, the people that are working for the system, the teachers and everything. But if this works and families get to make decisions, and remember, these are lower income families, and I think every family should be able to make a decision, not just families that are wealthy. So I think there's a system there that can work for the state of New Hampshire. New Hampshire's always been, you know, one of the states that wanted to make sure that the citizens could make the decisions themselves on every issue. And I think, you know, as we move forward with choice in education, we need to work together. I mean, this isn't a battle. This is about the child. And I think it's important that we get there.
Well, Mary, lots of debate around that issue, and I appreciate you writing in. And I have another question about education for you, Senator Morris, please. The closest vote of the day in the House on Wednesday was on a controversial bill called House Bill 544, which would prohibit public schools from teaching about so-called divisive concepts such as racism and sexism. Governor Sununu has repeatedly said, including on our show, that he opposes this. How do you feel about Senator Morris? How do you think you'll vote?
Yeah, I think that bill will come over to the House. It's actually coming over in the budget because I guess the House yesterday decided to table 544 itself. The Senate's
going to
debate
in the budget.
That.
Oh, okay.
They put it in the budget. The you know, and those are the kind of things that we work out between the Senate and the House and the governor. You know, the reality is I've had more phone calls and emails about that issue where people are very concerned. I mean, you know, probably the best article to describe what's wrong about this debate was a representative in Salem yesterday, Darrell Abbas. I mean, I think it's disgusting that he's being called a racist. I mean, there's a gentleman that could end up replacing me someday. He's a bright man. He cares about the community. He really, to come out and call him a racist because he voted for that bill, I think is absolutely wrong. And that's what's wrong about this debate, to be honest with you, because the calls that are coming in are certainly from people that are very concerned about what's going to be taught to their children. And, you know, I think this racism thing is showing up in a lot of categories in New Hampshire right now. Nothing I've ever heard of in my life. I mean, this is wrong for New Hampshire to, you know, interject racism when I don't believe New Hampshire stands for that. And
so I'm not clear.
This bill will
you
get the vote. What's that?
I'm not clear how you feel about clearly the bill isn't, you know, in its original form. You said it's been sort of stuffed into the budget, but I'm not clear on how you feel about it.
Yeah, I will probably support the bill in a fashion that it needs, you know, some kind of amendment to it. The I certainly have had enough constituents call me about it and text and email that, you know, they believe this 544 should be passed. I spoke somewhere last night and they were adamant, you know, it was probably 30 or 40 people in the room that they supported the legislation. What I don't want to see in New Hampshire is this become something that it's not. I mean, I really think New Hampshire, I brought up the Darrell Abbas thing because I thought it was disgusting. If we can't have debates in New Hampshire and work through situations like 544, then something's really wrong. And the reason you have 424 of us is because you want those debates in New Hampshire. Maybe, which we talked about earlier, Maybe it's the fact that we're doing everything on Zoom that we can't have these relationships. But 544 is exactly the reason I want to bring the Senate back, because we need to talk about it.
Wow. Okay. Well, I want to remind listeners that we can't take your calls today. I apologize about that. But we can take your emails, and our address is exchange@nhpr.org. And this is the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup on The Exchange. We're starting off the hour with New Hampshire Senate President Chuck Morse. And later on, we will hear about vaccines. We'll hear about a new news venture here in the state. Right now, though, as we're with Senator Morse, you can join us with an email. It's exchange@nhpr.org. Back to the school voucher issue, Senator Morse, we have an email from Beth who says, parents at a poverty level will not get school choice. Those are the ones that will fall through the cracks. With less than $20,000 for a family of four, families can barely hold things together. Those kids won't get choices. I think what Beth, you know, is trying to say there is that, you know, private school is not cheap. So even with a little voucher help, the very poorest of families won't be able to afford it.
I mean, we just started offering an opportunity here, and I think that's what Beth has to understand. This offer is up to, I believe, $70,000, $75,000 as the income level. It will give some people choice. I mean, if New Hampshire wants to go and fully fund, you know, a decision like that, that's the next step. I mean, and, you know, if that's what's being suggested, then we need to talk about it. But this is, you know, we put this in to give, you know, people choice. And if it means that people that ever have income levels of $20,000 need more help to get there, I'm certain we could bring legislation in to move this in a different direction. But it's all about the fact that, you know, the families and the child need to be able to have this opportunity. I mean, charter schools in my district have worked so well, and yet, you know, people are backing off their support on them, and I don't understand it, because, you know, Senator D'Alessandro and I used to attend the Birches in Salem all the time together when he had a grandchild there, and it was working. It is
charter schools are public schools, yeah, just to clarify,
yeah,
for folks in case they think
no, I got
schools.
That, but I mean, yeah, it is a choice. And I think these opportunities are what we need to offer in New Hampshire.
I have one more question for you, Senator Morse. And we talked earlier about House Bill 544 and how that's been put in the budget. Another bill that was put in the budget is several bills, actually, that would curtail gubernatorial powers during a state of emergency. For example, the governor could declare one, but the legislature would have to approve any extensions. What are your thoughts, Senator Morse, on this broad effort to curtail the gubernatorial emergency powers? And is it appropriate that that effort be put in the budget?
Well, I think the governor has done a great job of managing the state of New Hampshire for the last year. And I certainly wouldn't want to limit his powers to do that, because I really do, even though I had disagreements with him about businesses being open, businesses being closed, I mean, I voiced those opinions and the governor made the decision because we elected him and he is the governor. I mean, the reality of the whole thing is he protected the citizens of New Hampshire and he kept the economy going. And that's showing in the budget, you know, that we're reviewing right now, is that we did keep this economy going during this time. Now, are there problems? Absolutely. I mean, you know, between hotels and restaurants, that's an industry, all of that industry is lagging now and we need help. And I think that's some of the concern that people are writing legislation about the governor's powers or industries like that. You know, we're learning to get through this. We've never dealt with something like COVID ever before, but I don't believe we should be limiting the governor's powers. And I do believe that, you know, as we move forward here, the state of New Hampshire will open and we'll get back to as much as normal can be.
Well, Senator Morse, we could have talked a lot longer, but for now, I really appreciate you being with us. Thank you.
Cool. Thank you, Laura. I appreciate you having me on.
All right. Take care. That's Chuck Morse. Again, he's a Republican from Salem. He's president of the New Hampshire Senate. Now, next week on the Roundup, we will talk with the Senate's Democratic leader, Donna Soucy. So coming up, we'll hear about new efforts to bolster New Hampshire's great outdoors. Listeners, what would you like to see from the state's new Office of Outdoor Recreation and Development? You can let us know with an email to exchange@nhpr.org, and we'll be right back.
I believe in a concept called pay it forward.
Stephen Randall of Northfield recently became a member of NHPR's Leadership Circle.
Because I realized the value that it provided to me personally. And so this is my way of making sure that this news source stays around for everybody.
You can join Steve and pay it forward when you give $100 a month as a member of NHPR's Leadership Circle. Learn more at nhpr.org/leaders.
This is the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup on The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Now we'll check in with the state's efforts to bolster outdoor recreation and the outdoor economy. With us is Scott Crowder. He's director of the state's brand new Office of Outdoor Recreation Industry Development. Scott, welcome to The Exchange.
Good morning, Laura. How are you?
Good. Good to have you. And I want to invite our listeners also to join us. If you have questions about what this new office will do, what you hope it does, our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Just for today, we're unable to take your calls, but you can also use Twitter or Facebook. And again, the email is exchange@nhpr.org. So, Scott, why does New Hampshire need an Office of Outdoor Recreation Industry Development?
I feel like when you look at the state and the economy and the drivers, the quality of life, a lot of it hinges around this outdoor recreation, right? The ability to take advantage of our natural assets, get outside and ski or walk along the beach or whitewater raft. So this office has been established to kind of be that beacon, that strategic convener to bring all these stakeholders together and really promote the state for its benefit.
So nobody was doing that before under the tourism office, for example?
Well, so the tourism office, so this Office of Outdoor Recreation Industry Development is part of the Business and Economic Affairs Office, which also has the workforce development, business development, economic development, as well as travel and tourism. So travel and tourism is definitely focused on promoting visitation, travel spending. What the Office of Outdoor Industry Development is going to do is work in conjunction. It's definitely more of a complementary office to support what they're doing, but also go a little bit further into the business development side, the economic development side. And there's a big balance, too, of conservation and stewardship through all of this.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. So what is the wide definition of outdoor economy then, Scott? You know, beyond the obvious of people buying hiking boots or paying for a campsite.
Sure. I mean, I think when you look at it, you have kind of that direct. I mean, you have the people that are selling and living within the outdoor recreation industry,
right.
The outfitters, the manufacturers, the experience providers, whether it's the rafting guides or the backcountry guides. But then you also have the other side of it where the outdoor economy and the outdoor recreation amenities could be a driver for people to come and live and work here, businesses that don't necessarily fit into that outdoor rec category. So it's wide reaching, and I think a lot of people might not understand or think that outdoor recreation has a part or a huge part here in New Hampshire. But when you think of how diverse the state is from an outdoor natural assets, I mean, we have the seacoast, we have the White Mountains, we have the Lakes region, we have the North Woods, we have the Connecticut River Valley, Monadnock. And it's so diverse, and it's so close in proximity, plus the population that we have for people to travel in and visit New Hampshire, as well as what's coming out of COVID with remote work. It's a great opportunity for New Hampshire to capitalize on this outdoor rec space and further develop it.
Yeah, so it's a lot more than just, you know, taking your boat out on the lake. It's a whole sort of marketing tool for businesses to say, hey, come and work for me. You can live in this beautiful state and, you know, have a high quality of life. You mentioned diversity in terms of the diversity of the outdoor offerings that New Hampshire has. And for sure, we've got it all, you know, rivers, lakes, mountains, coast. There's a lot of discussion, though, now, Scott, as I'm sure you know, in outdoor recreation and the wider environmental community about diversity of people and how outdoor spaces, you know, often feel unwelcoming to people of color. And also there's a lot of conversation about how people who work in these industries are largely white. What's the impact of this, Scott, of this general lack of diversity in outdoor companies and outdoor spaces?
Yeah, I feel like it's the same impact that you'd have in really any other industry. I mean, if you're only appealing to a small subset of the population, then you're certainly missing the boat. The appeal, I mean, I think I've worked in the outdoor recreation industry before this, ran a shop on Lake Winnipesaukee, put people out on the lake, canoes, kayaks, paddle boards, and certainly more and more the last few years, you'd see a more diverse clientele of people. And last year with COVID, I think it was even more so. I mean, the impact from everything else being shut down and people seeing outdoor recreation as a as an outlet and a safe outlet at that point during the pandemic, it was amazing to see kind of the diversity coming through the doors. And at the end of the day, I think people just don't understand if they haven't had access to it, or they haven't experienced it at maybe a younger age, or maybe the parents don't have the experience, maybe they don't feel safe doing it. There's a level of being uncomfortable in certain situations if you're not well versed in outdoor recreation, whether it's I'm uncomfortable in the woods, or I don't like being out on a paddleboard that could fall in the lake and I'm not used to that. So I think one big aspect of this office is making sure that we're promoting the offerings that we have, but also making it appealing and maybe kind of lowering the barrier of entry and getting more people excited about what the outdoor lifestyle can offer. Because, I mean, the benefits of health and wellness and spending time in the woods and fresh air, I mean, it's kind of it's there, and there's a lot of reasons that we want to drive people outside.
Sure, sure. Not only for the pure economic benefits, but for the lifestyle benefits and for the health benefits. So I hear you that's on your mind as you take on this role. Another huge, huge issue for people in your line of work, Scott, as you know, is climate change and the impact that it's having on our outdoor spaces. How much is it within the scope of your office to address this?
So I think when the office was developed, so this office was approved during the fall 2019 legislation session. Took a little while with COVID to get the position filled, and obviously I took office about two or three weeks ago at this point. So there's a lot of great line items that were identified as what this office should be. The environmental stewardship is one of them. I mean, climate change wasn't directly identified, but it certainly plays a role. I mean, you think of there's a big component of our outdoor rec and our economy here in New Hampshire that's hinged on cold winters and frozen lakes and snowy trails. So it's going to be certainly a focus of mine to further vet all of that. There's great organizations across the country. I mean, we're the 16th state to have one of these offices. So there's a lot of great resources out there that we're going to be able to lean on and continue to kind of add to the conversation and hopefully find solutions for some of these problems.
So I just have one or two more questions for you, Scott, because I know you have to go. Laura did send us an email. Laura says, I would like this department to educate everyone enjoying the outdoors to understand the interdependence of everything and the impact of their actions, positive and negative, on the environment. So there's a hope for your new role from Laura, Scott. Two more questions for you. You said that New Hampshire's outdoor economy isn't just the White Mountains, the Lakes region, the Seacoast, which, you know, tend to get the lion's share of attention. What's your message going to be there, Scott, about, yes, these amenities are great, but look bigger?
Yeah, I mean, I think for so many reasons, people sometimes think of the state as almost two states, right? It's north of Concord and it's south of Concord. And I think when outdoor recreation comes to mind, people immediately think of north of Concord, right? All of the outdoor amenities in the Lakes region and the White Mountains and the Great North Woods. But I mean, you have people that are working for amazing companies in Nashua that hop on their mountain bikes at their lunch hour.
Right.
They're taking advantage of the trail systems in Nashua and Hollis and getting out there and riding and then going back to work. And it's kind of to pull out these amenities and tell the story of the assets that we do have. And it's only going to help, the city of Nashua, the employers find workforce. And it's There's just a lot of value there, and I think that hasn't been pursued as a state as wholly as it needs to be, and that's what this office is going to do. And I mean, the goal for us is to really be a strategic convener and kind of shine a spotlight on the value that's at our fingertips here in New Hampshire.
Yeah, the value or the outdoors holistically, you know, in your backyard in Nashua. Last question for you, Scott, and again, I know you have another meeting to go to, so I appreciate it. What has New Hampshire's experience in the pandemic taught you about how you might want to move forward in this new role? For example, you referenced earlier just the huge number of new people we saw engaging with the outdoors.
Yeah, I mean, there's amazing groups, obviously, here within the state. There's the Granite Outdoor Alliance, the Appalachian Mountain Club, Northern Forest Center. I mean, all of the land managers. And I mean, they're on the forefront of this and obviously dealt with it last year with that huge influx. But it's definitely a balancing act. It's like we want to drive people outside to enjoy the natural assets, but there is an impact there. So I think it's understanding that the impact isn't always positive, working to find solutions to make it as positive as it can be. And then you also have the side of this where everybody that comes to New Hampshire to experience the outdoors, I mean, they're our customers, right? They're coming here to experience our assets, to experience our communities. And if they're having a negative experience, they might not come back. A lot of times when you think of New Hampshire, it's a family hiking on a trail. But last year it was hundreds of people hiking up the same trail, accessing the trailhead, the parking. So to push people to maybe lesser known hikes, different areas of the state that offer a unique outdoor experience that's not just Franconia Notch or Mount Monadnock. So there's a lot that we're going to work on, and I'm definitely excited and honored to kind of hold this position and pursue it and wave the flag for the state.
All right. Well, Scott, it's great to talk to you. I really appreciate you taking the time for us today.
Of course. Thanks so much.
That's Scott Crowden. He's director of the state's new Office of Outdoor Recreation Industry Development. Well, New Hampshire's media landscape will soon welcome a new player. The founders of a site called the New Hampshire Bulletin plan to release their first stories soon. With us now is editor Dana Wormald. Dana, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me, Laura.
Good to have you. And listeners, we want to hear from you too. What would you like to see from a new news organization here in New Hampshire? What stories or issues do you think deserve more coverage that you hope this new entity will cover? Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org, or use Twitter or Facebook. So, Dana, why did you decide to create this new nonprofit news site? What needs in the media landscape were not being met?
Well, it's I heard about State's Newsroom and saw what they were doing. Thought it was a great mission. It's not so much that I think something's hugely missing. I just think there's an opportunity for us to supplement coverage of government, statehouse coverage, as newsrooms are being stretched thin. So it was just a chance to work with, great reporters and continue to try to do good journalism in the state where there's already a lot of good journalism happening.
So give us a couple examples of the types of stories, Dana, readers can expect to see in the New Hampshire Bulletin.
Yeah, so I think about it in three ways where, we'll be trying to cover, the traditional daily story, the stuff we think is most important for readers to see. From there, we'll be trying to go in more in depth on some of those stories. So it takes a little more reporting. And then in the background, we'll be working on the larger investigative enterprise pieces, on topics, everything. COVID will be part of it, education, health, energy, environment, that sort of stuff.
Wow, there's a lot there. And yeah. You're right. The traditional newspaper newsrooms have been sort of hollowed out. How will your work be different than the work that's being done at other news organizations, though, including, still robust coverage by our traditional newspapers? Also, we have NHPR. There's another nonprofit online news source, indepthnh.org, run by veteran journalist Nancy West. So how are you guys going to be different, Dana?
I'm not sure I would use the word different, I guess. I think think you can never have too many well-reported stories about what's happening in state government. you know, and I think our ability to investigate deeper and, you know, not have some of the constraints of filling a daily news hole. I'm a newspaper guy, so that's always been part of the, you know, the pressure to, you know, you have a certain news hole to fill every day. And
I can relate to that, Dana.
Yeah, right.
Being live every day at 9 o'clock, I can relate to having to fill the news hole. Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you there.
No, that's okay. And so I think it's, we have an opportunity to help the people of New Hampshire become more informed. So I don't know that it's different. It's just more, and I hope, you know, becomes really valuable to everybody here.
So at some point, Dana, you and your reporters have to get paid, and you've hired some, you know, reporters with great reputations who've been covering the state for a long time. So congrats on that. How are you going to pay these folks?
Yeah, so State's Newsroom, if you can actually see, they have a lot of donors that support the mission of State House coverage throughout the country. And so you can actually visit statesnewsroom.com and you can see the donors and find out more information about other affiliates. You can look at all the other newsrooms and see the work they're doing. We'll also, you know, appreciate any support from local readers that will help fund special projects and some of our investigations. And, you know, I hope people do, you know, think we're worth investing in locally too.
So what is State's Newsroom? I'm not familiar with that.
It's a nonprofit that was formed a few years ago. They just, as they were watching the decline of journalism jobs in the country, and it was becoming more and more difficult for news outlets to staff state houses, they just formed this nonprofit to get veteran journalists into state houses to make sure that coverage didn't go away. And so it's a really terrific mission and really happy to be a part of it. And, you know, beyond thrilled to work with the team that we have here in New Hampshire.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay. So it's a national nonprofit concerned about the decline in local journalism, got some big donors right together, and then turned to veteran state-based journalists like you and said, you know, here you go, get this thing started. So people aren't going to have to pay for your content, no paywalls, anything like that?
No, yeah, no paywall, no ads. Every other news outlet is free to publish our work. You know, just another, we really see it as a public service, and it's just another way to help get the information to people.
When are you officially launching, Dana?
Very soon. I don't know how big of a secret it's supposed to be, but it'll be sometime in the next week.
Okay, and where can listeners find out more information?
Well, you can go to newhampshirebulletin.com and sign up for our newsletter. That would be terrific. That will show up in your inbox every morning and give you a rundown of what we're working, what we've published, and stuff you may have missed. You can follow us on Twitter, NH Bulletin News, and on Facebook. We're on Apple News also. So.
Anything else, Dana, that you want our audience to know about this new venture?
Other than, you know, I our staff, Anne-Marie Timmons, Ethan DeWitt, Amanda Gokey, I just can't tell you how impressed and excited I am to work with them. They're such talented, passionate journalists. You know, Ethan and Anne-Marie especially are true veterans of the state government and New Hampshire. And Amanda is such a wonderful writer and incredibly intelligent. And I hope they follow along and look for the work of the staff, because it's really an amazing group.
Okay. Well, again, we've got a link on our website, nhpr.org/exchange, to that information that you just gave, Dana. Okay. Well, so we'll keep an eye out for it. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. Good to talk to you. That's Dana Wormald, editor of the forthcoming New Hampshire Bulletin. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, an update on new vaccine policies in the state announced just yesterday. listeners, what questions or concerns do you have about the state's vaccine rollout? What experiences have you had with it? You can send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. You can use Facebook or Twitter. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. And you can stay with us for more of the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup right here on NHPR.
I listen to NHPR because it opens up my world.
Peg Hendel of Waterville Valley is a proud member of NHPR's Leadership Circle.
I really value the fair and well-researched and well-balanced information that I get. That's something I just had to support.
You too can join NHPR's growing family of Leadership Circle members when you invest $100 a month into the statewide news service you trust at nhpr.org/leaders.
This is the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup on the Exchange. I'm Laura Canoy. And let's get the latest news now on the pandemic in our state and some new vaccine policies. You can join us with your questions about this by email to exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Comment on Facebook or Twitter. Just for today, we're unable to take your phone calls. With us now is Nancy West, executive editor of In-Depth NH. She has been covering this issue, including the gubernatorial news conferences that happen every Thursday afternoon. Nancy, a big welcome, and thank you for your time.
Oh, thanks for having me, Laura.
So yesterday, Governor Sununu announced at his weekly press conference, I was listening, that starting on April 19th, anybody age 16 and older is eligible for the vaccine in New Hampshire, regardless of their residency. So who might be in that new group, Nancy?
Well, this came as a surprise to me, and I've been following this very closely. And I think one of the important groups will be out-of-state college students who live here in New Hampshire on campus or in the community. Governor Sununu was taking an awful lot of heat for not allowing those out-of-state students to be vaccinated when health experts were saying that could be very dangerous to other students and the communities where the colleges are located. So this really takes him off the hook for that.
What about snowbirds, Nancy? Other groups that come to mind who might be eligible?
Yes, snowbirds, people who live out of state. Actually, Governor Sununu said anybody who wants a vaccination, if they're 16 and over, no residency requirements whatsoever. People could come from other states, Massachusetts, Vermont, if they're close to the border. Although that starts on April 19th. And I think by that time, many of the other states will also have much more broader eligibility to get their vaccine. So I don't foresee throngs of people coming into New Hampshire to get it. But it will be very helpful, I'm sure, to snowbirds, people who own second homes here, and especially those college students from out of state.
So how will those out-of-state people, Nancy, sign up for the vaccine here in New Hampshire? Do they just use the same system?
Yeah, it all has to go through the state's registration site, and it's called VINI. Now, there's a bunch of different pharmacies that are offering the vaccines and state sites. Governor Sununu was clear that people can't just show up at these sites and say they want a vaccination.
Right.
Everyone has to sign up through VINI. And to get more information on that, it's very simple. It's a walkthrough website. It's vaccines.nh.gov. And that's vaccines with an S dot NH dot gov. And people can sign up right there.
Yeah. And if people don't have computer access, there's 211. I have called that line myself and didn't take very long to get my questions answered.
Yeah, go ahead,
Nancy.
I've used that as well.
Yeah. So how is New Hampshire doing compared to the rest of the country in terms of administering vaccine?
Well, I think there's a lot of different comparisons. The latest figure I saw today was 45% of the people, who are eligible have of the population have received one dose of the vaccine, and 22% are fully vaccinated.
Nancy, you still there, or did we just lose you? Nancy, you still there? You might have muted yourself.
Oh, I apologize. I did.
You know, it's just the way things are going these days. It's totally fine. So about 45% of Granite Staters total population have received at least one dose, which, as I understand, is ahead of every other state. And then about 20%, I think you said 22%, Nancy, of Granite Staters are fully vaccinated. So got the two doses and so forth. What did the governor say, Nancy, about the state's plan to address so-called vaccine hesitancy?
Well, I believe his plan is to really get a big media boost to explain what the vaccine is, to really get people on board. So I think there'll be a big advertising campaign that we're expecting to see. I haven't seen it yet. But the governor spoke about that at a previous press conference, that is how he's hoping to get people on board, on social media, TV ads. And I think by example, you know, he has spoken about getting his own shot. He's planning on getting his vaccine on Saturday at the New Hampshire Motor Speedway. There's another mass vaccination event going on Saturday and Sunday in Loudoun at the New Hampshire Motor Speedway. He'll be there getting his vaccination.
We are now a full week, as you well know, Nancy, into Granite Staters age 16 and older, big group being eligible to receive the vaccine. Do you have a sense of how that process has been going?
Well, the experts that spoke Thursday said about 200,000 new signups have been registered since that announcement. So,
well, that's a lot.
A lot. And I think they're optimistic, but still would really like to get more shots in the arm. This is a huge goal of the whole team at DHHS and the governor.
Well, sure. And if not enough people get vaccinated, then we don't achieve herd immunity. And then these variants that are circulating have the opportunity to circulate even more. And I know they talked about that yesterday. And you're right, that is definitely a big goal. And as you said, the state's holding a mass vaccination site at the Speedway in Loudoun. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine will be there. And Governor Sununu said, you know, that's a one-shot deal, one and done, basically. There are Sunday appointments also in Concord, Newington, Salem, where residents can receive that J&J vaccine. This is a big deal, Nancy. How has this been able to happen? What's sort of the bigger picture there?
Of getting these, I think having this amount of Johnson & Johnson vaccine really has made it possible to have these extra events. In fact, I'm not sure there's any openings left to register for either the Speedway or the special Sunday event. People should go to the Vinnie website and check, because they also could move up their, they couldn't move up their second shot because it's the J&J, but they may be full on both of those events.
Okay. Well, again, the site is vaccines.nh.gov. And you can also call 211 if you have further questions. And I just have two more questions for you, Nancy. First of all, as the warm weather approaches, and boy, it was a warm day yesterday, what did Governor Sununu say at that news conference, Nancy, about what this summer might look like?
Oh, the governor is, you know, he's very optimistic about summer looking normal or very close to normal in New Hampshire. By Memorial Day, he's expecting to have.
And Nancy, did we just lose you again there? Okay. Maybe Nancy's cat is stepping on the mute button. That's happened in my house. No, Nancy, you still there?
I'm here, and I don't even have a cat. There's some sort of mystery ghost.
You can blame my cat. Go ahead.
Sorry about that.
You were talking about the summer.
Oh, Governor Sununu says the summer in New Hampshire is going to look very much like normal or normal. I think he's very optimistic and excited about summer, and it's certainly making me excited about this coming summer. I think people can expect a lot of reopenings or easing of certain restrictions that they've been experiencing. I'm not sure exactly what they are, but I think it's going to be a good summer in New Hampshire.
A couple more questions for you, Nancy, but not related to the vaccination process that I know you've been covering. You're also, you know, the lead editor of InDepthNH.org. So what stories will you guys be tracking next week? Give us a preview, Nancy.
We're hot and heavy on the State House, on the legislature right now. The House is in its third day of sessions at the New Hampshire Sportsplex in Bedford. And they had to go through 300 bills to be finished in time for crossover and to stay on target for finishing the session. So we're all government all the time right now. Gary Reno and Paula Tracy and myself are covering the State House. I know Gary Reno will be covering the House session today. They've been fast and furious. I'm not sure if they'll finish their work today, but they're very hopeful.
So crossover day, for listeners who don't know, it's more crossover days, right, Nancy? That's when the House gives all its bills to the Senate and the Senate gives all its bills to the House. And we talked earlier with Senate President Chuck Morris about what some of those bills might be. Go ahead, Nancy. Yeah.
And if you've been following the, you know, Gary Reno's reports, you know, it's been a very contentious session of the House. The Republicans have a very small majority, but it have put in a lot of bills that have turned out to be very controversial. And there's been a lot of hot debate on the floor. People can watch these sessions unfold daily. They're up. They go to newhampshire.gov to the streaming, the pull down that says streaming media. They can listen to what their lawmakers have to say. It's wonderful to watch and to report on. It's very exciting.
So just to reiterate, the House has been meeting in person at that Bedford Sportsplex. Senator Morris told us that the Senate has been meeting virtually and has one more virtual meeting, and then they'll go into in-person session. So it's interesting to hear you say, talk about that different dynamic, Nancy. Why do you think that's the case? The House is huge, but there they are meeting in person. The Senate has 12 senators, and they're meeting remotely.
Well, that's kind of interesting because seven disabled Democrats sued to be able to have some sort of remote option for people who really were either concerned about getting COVID or who were disabled and couldn't make it to the session at the Sportsplex. And just yesterday, the First Circuit overturned the local U.S. District Court ruling, you know, sort of saying that the legislature couldn't be sued. So that's going to be remanded back to the U.S. District Court to determine, A, whether or not these seven lawmakers are, you know, would be considered disabled under the Americans with Disabilities Act. So there'll be more to come on that. That's a legal fight that's ongoing.
All right. And more for you and your team to cover, Nancy. Thank you very much for giving us your time. We appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having me, Laura. Have a great day.
That's Nancy West, executive editor of InDepthNH.org. Nancy and I talked about the vaccine signups and how that has expanded. Just a reminder for listeners that to sign up, the state's VINI website is vaccines.nh.gov. And if you don't have access to a computer, you can call 211 to get that appointment scheduled. Here's a couple other stories that the NHPR newsroom is following this week. Some New Hampshire schools say they can't meet Governor Sununu's reopening deadline. Some districts say they need more time to fully reopen than they have under the April 19th deadline Sununu has set. They point to teacher vaccination timelines, understaffing, inability to social distance on buses and in some classrooms as major hurdles. For example, the Monadnock Regional School District School Board has voted to stick with its original plan to reopen fully on May 3rd, and a number of other districts are asking Education Commissioner Frank Edelblue for waivers to reopen as they originally intended on May 3rd. So that's one story that our newsroom is covering. Also, New Hampshire is seeing brush fires amidst a drier than average spring. Responders have put out at least two small brush fires in New Hampshire this week amid dry conditions and high winds. Fire danger has been rated at least moderate in the state this week, and there's little rain in the forecast in the coming days. Another story that NHPR has been tracking and that the governor talked about yesterday, seven men are facing criminal charges for allegedly sexually abusing minors at the state's youth detention facility between 1994 and 2005. Those charges were announced by the New Hampshire Attorney General's office. They're part of an ongoing investigation. Lastly, the Old Lady of Kensington, a record-setting tree, came down this week. The tree once earned the title of the biggest sugar maple in the nation. Wow. Its final girth measurement was 21 feet. It's believed to have been planted around 1780. But a recent windstorm left the beloved tree beyond repair with a large crack in the trunk. And an arborist, our reporters tell us, carefully cut down the tree on Monday. Well, that's all the news that we have for the Roundup this week. Today's Roundup was produced by Exchange producer Jane Vaughn. Thanks, everybody, for being with us. This is the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup on The Exchange here on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.